Welcome back to Talking Baseball, and my next guest is a 19-year career veteran. He was a two-time All-Star with the Padres and the D-backs. He was a World Series champion also with the D-backs. Five-time Gold Glove winner. Let's welcome in Steve Finley. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing great.
Well, congratulations on a great career. 16 years in the National League, 3 in the American League. And the times have changed, there's no doubt about it, and I want to talk about what you think of how the game's changed from when you played. And the first thing I want to approach are strikeouts. Strikeouts are up immense this year and past few years. You had 10,490 plate appearances, and you struck out 1,200 times. That tells me that you have a whole different approach back then, the way how the game has changed. How in your mind do you watch the game now, seeing so many guys strike out 12, 14 times a game, compared to when you put the ball in play so much?
Well, I mean, when I played, it was all about putting the ball in play. Every manager I played with, every hitting instructor, put the ball in play. Especially when you get two strikes, good things can happen. Strikeout, nothing good can happen. So it was about contact and really being able, I guess, for lack of a better term, having bat control. We did a lot of hit and runs, so you had to manipulate the barrel of the bat to try to hit one the other way on the ground. And there was a lot more probably fundamental baseball play, bunting them over, making sure you pull the ball to the right side, with a guy on second and nobody out. And I'd say, the biggest change nowadays is that's kind of all out the window. The statisticians will tell you that, runner at third base, less than two outs, only scores, a little over 50% of the time. Well, I'm like, well, that's still, let's do the stats of how many times at second base a guy scores. Yep. So, and how about the pressure pitches on the pitcher? There's a lot more things that go into the game than just, straight up numbers. And I think, the numbers, the sabermetrics in the game, everything's got a place. And I think it probably helps them value players and find players that maybe they weren't even thinking about before that can fit on a team in a certain way. But that's, some of the main things, and this thing with launch angle, I think, has really contributed that the launch angle and the statistician saying, the ball in the air has a higher average. And my whole argument behind that is that, they're counting line drives as a ball in the air. That's a little unfair for the ground ball to fly ball ratio. Cause I can tell you from an outfielder standpoint, I love a fly ball. I can run into these catch holes all day.
Well, you definitely were. You were a five-time Gold Glove winner in the outfield and twice with the Padres, three times with Arizona. And that was the second thing I wanted to get into is the defense aspect of it. With all the shifts going on and you see all these outfielders, infielders have their little information cards. To me, I'm old school baseball. I don't think you're old school yet, but at the same time, it's the same theories. The shift has changed so many different flight paths, so many different ways of hitting base hits. Tell me your thoughts about the shifts, especially in the outfield.
If a hitter is going to continually hit a ball to a certain area and make no adjustments to go the other way, why wouldn't you put everybody on one side? Mm-hmm. The object is to get as many outs as you can get out of a guy. On the flip side, if that was me hitting and I saw the big hole over there, I saw Kevin Biggio do it the other day. Guy on second, third base and two outs, and they had the shortstop past second base towards the right side of the field, and he literally took bat control, took the bat and pretended like he hit a hit and run and bounced the ball right through the shortstop hole to score a run. Those are the kind of things that will help move the shift back away from being a total shift like that. If you can have some bat control whenever it's necessary to manipulate the baseball where they aren't. And when it's a slight shift, it's kind of hard to do that. But when it's a big shift like they're doing nowadays and leaving almost a whole side of the infield open, a big league hitter, if they work on that, and that's the key thing, if they work on that, should be able to manipulate their bat. But the theories now of the ball in the air, and to your point about strikeouts, a lot of players adjusted their swings with these private hitting gurus that try to get them to launch the ball in the air, where, really launch angle is only happens whenever you catch a ball a little further out in front and your bat's already in the upward trajectory, which means you have to have a quick bat. Mm-hmm. It means quick to the back of the hitting zone and then flat out through and then start to come back up again. When you get guys trying to hit the ball in the air, they drop their back shoulder too much. Their bat goes in and out of the hitting zone. Their averages go down. They might pop a few out of the ballpark when they get lucky and connect on the right pitch. But their average goes down, the production goes down, which you've seen across the board. Strikeouts go up.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, just you see that across the board, but I think it's starting to – the pendulum is starting to swing back the other way, where now I'm hearing a lot more, hey, we need to start putting the ball in play a little more, shorten up your swing, which, you know, when production starts going down and fans start griping about the game of baseball and fans stop going to the game of baseball, start watching the game of baseball, well, guess what? You better change to get back to a little bit of what we had before.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And when you look at team batting averages, under 230, majority of the teams, and it's mostly not putting the ball in play. And I agree with you. When you see shifts, guys, in our day, you could go opposite way. It didn't matter where the ball was placed, inside or outside. You understood what you had to do to push that ball to that spot. I argue with that same thing with on the pitching side. When guys have a shift on, why are you pitching against the shift? Because that's why you're supposed to throw it to the point of making the shift work for you. So it's definitely changed. But today the Giants are playing the Angels, and I really want to get your thought pattern on a couple hitters. Of course, Mike Trout is out. Shohei Ohtani is now the big star there, as well as Rendon. You've been watching him a lot. Ohtani has definitely got a lot of eyes on him in baseball. Your analysis on him?
I mean, he is a great player, and you know, I'm glad that he is opening the door that seems to have been closed since Babe Ruth was around, where a position player and a hitter can both coexist in the game of baseball. I mean, I'm sorry, a pitcher and a position player can coexist in baseball, and you know, it forwards a little easier in the American League, so he can win it where he can DH. But it's fantastic, and I'm, you know, we have a guy on the Padres second baseman. You know, he came over from
Cronworth,
Tampa Bay, and he won Rookie of the Year last year. But he came over as potential pitcher, and he's already pitched once this year, so. You know, there's plenty of guys probably with the capability of doing it, but I think you know, people's fear is that you're going to be average in both of them and not a star in both of them. But I think Ohtani's showing you that maybe you can do both.
Now, you played both in American League and National League. Rendon is now coming from the you know, Washington Nationals last year. Is there a big adjustment in the hitting side when you're doing that from different leagues?
I definitely think so. I think you have to have a grace period. You know, Eric Hosmer came over here from Kansas City, and it took him a year and a half to kind of readjust himself to new pitchers, learn, you know, how they're going to pitch him and attack him, and now he's thriving. You know, and I think, you know, Rendon probably would have a little bit of that. I mean, good hitters are good hitters. You throw a ball in the zone, they're going to hit it, but there's still little nuances, and when you get used to facing guys over and over and over again, you get an idea of how they're trying to attack you, and what their pitch actually looks like and where it's going to break. And that's just, you know, seeing a guy over a number of at-bats. And when you're in a different league, yeah, there's interleague play, but it's not, you know, like playing a team 19 times like you do in your own division and making sure you get home and aways with everybody else.
So I kind of did a little research on it, and I want to know if you remember who's hot and who's not. Who did you hit well off of, and who did you have trouble with? So I'm going to throw a name, and you tell me if you hit him good or not. Tom Candiotti, the knuckleballer.
Lava hot.
Very hot. 358. Six home runs. How about Al Leiter?
Not so hot.
Not so hot. 3 for 22.
There's another fellow Giants reliever that, oh, he liked coming into face me, Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah, he was on my list too. How about Greg Maddux? Yeah. That's a good one. How about Greg Maddux?
You know what? It was a tale of two careers, very not hot in the first half of facing him and very hot in the second half of facing him.
I thought it was pretty good. 25 for 94. He got four home runs off of him, so he definitely tried to pitch you low. I got a couple 20, other ones 23 here.
Of those, 23 of those hits were in the second half of my career facing him. The first half was not very good.
How about Bob Welch? That's an early one in your career.
Wow, that's an early one. I think that was the average, you know?
One for 16, sorry to say.
Oh, not so good.
I got a couple good ones for you. How about Charlie Huff?
Wow, Charlie Huff. I think I got a couple here. I don't have a couple doubles off of him. Not too many. Not too many in the box, but did I own him? You know, some about
11 for 24, 458. That was a good one. And then, you know, I'll throw a giant to you as we end, Russ Ortiz.
You know, I think I got some home runs, but I think he did pretty well against me.
Yeah, you got him pretty good. Couple home runs, 15 for 38, 395. But I got one last one here for you, and I got to ask you, how in the hell you didn't hit Randy Wolf?
You know, Randy Wolf's balls look like beach balls coming in. And
that's what I want to know. How did you not hit him?
He liked throwing those high fastballs, and I could just never get on top of it. It always looked like it was down the middle, but it was just – I swung just underneath it and hit a lot of fly balls off him.
Well, you went 0 for 16 off of him. That was one of the worst ones you ever had. That surprised me. So I'll leave you with a good one. My last one for you. I'll leave you with a good one. Chuck Finley. Chuck Finley, the big lefty.
Yeah, I think I was like 4 for 8 off him or something like that.
You owned him 8 for 19. You hit 500 off of him.
Oh, 8 for 19. Wow, better than
that. Yeah, excellent. Well, listen, thanks so much for spending some time with me today. We really appreciate it. And Steve Finley, you were always a giant, always will be a giant, even though you played 1 year here. And it was great having you in the orange and black.
Well, it was a great experience playing in front of all the fans. They're a great fan base there, and I'm really happy they won the World Series. They did. The city really deserved it.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Steve. You be safe. Be well.
You got it. Thank you.
Oh, Steve Finley on Talking Baseball. We're going to be right back on KNBR 104.5 680, the sports leader.